Hi friends, new and regular listeners. This is Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik and we are coming to you from Göteborg in Sweden. It's good to have you all with us today and I hope you are comfy wherever you are in the world and ready for another interesting radio program. As you know, the website is redicecreations.com. If you don't know, please go there to see, hear and read more about what we do here. You can check through our free radio archive. We have about a year of free radio up there for you. If you want to know more and if you want to dig deeper into some of these subjects that we discuss with many of our guests, I urge you to check out our members area as well for much more material, also video material, interviews and films we have up there for you. And today we are going to talk basically about the transhumanist movements and thoughts on possible origins of human technology. We're going to discuss an article called The Gods of Technology with Kyle Hunt, who is behind a website called Star Theory. And the article is a very good overview of the subject, and we're going to begin to discuss this here today. And it's always fun to bring new people on the program as well, to get some new blood, as it were, into this. And by the way, you will find the website at startheory.wordpress.com. Head on over to there, take a good look around. There's many articles for you there to dig into. So with that, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Kyle Hunt. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. You know, why don't we begin, as we usually do when we have some new people here on the show, we like to get some background, so to speak, on you and how long you've been doing the work that you're doing, and basically when you started up your blog or your website, Kyle.
All right, well, I've been doing this kind of work for a few years now. I started when I was working out in Silicon Valley, and kind of I just realized that something was a little bit off, not only with technology, it kind of started with politics. And so the first article I actually had published on the internet was called The Political Earthquake, and it was at lewrockwell.com. He's something of a libertarian thinker, runs the Mises Institute, and that article got a great reception. It was about Ron Paul and the primaries and kind of just putting forth a different idea as to how the United States could run the country, its foreign policy, and you know, how we could kind of become you know, a beacon of hope in the world once again. Obviously, we didn't really go down the route I was hoping at the time, but I still do have a, you know, kind of faith that things can turn around. So after that, I kind of I took this idea of writing and went all different directions. I stayed in the politics a little bit. I published quite a few articles on a news site called opednews.com. They were really well received. I started getting into a bit of the metaphysical, and actually one of the articles I published was called Star Theory there, and it really kind of try to lay out the connection that we have to all that is and the idea that we ourselves are stars. And I started publishing under the name Ferdinand after a while, because my mother used to call me that when I was younger, because I'm relatively big in size and have been pretty peaceful for the most part. I have a pretty, generally a friendly demeanor, although I've been described before like a bull in a china shop by one former employer out in the valley, Silicon Valley. So that's the kind of approach I try to take with the blog, which I just started up actually this September, as kind of a new avenue for thought. I try to go in there, you know, unafraid of breaking a few things along the way. But I also try to, you know, bring a lot of heart into the subject, because it can get pretty dark when dealing with, you know, some of these topics. So I really try to at least be a little bit uplifting, you know, in some aspects of the articles.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. And that's always a good way to round things up on, just as you do in many of your articles. When did you start looking into the technological aspect then? Did you work with some of this in terms of your background, where you were employed and such things, or did this kind of come along with the as a side effect of looking into some of the political world, or how did you get into that?
Well, that's actually very interesting. I wasn't sure if I was going to mention this, but I used to recruit out for Google in at their headquarters in California.
Mm.
This wasn't, you know, what I had studied at all. I actually studied psychology and theater and dance in college. I designed sets and lighting, but I decided that I needed to make a little bit more money. I saw that Google was a great place to work, and I really liked their products. So I found a job that I could apply for out there, got it. And so I was kind of introduced to the whole, technology realm that way. And when I was out there, I saw a lot of things about where technology was heading. Just being in Silicon Valley kind of was very illuminating. And so I would talk about all of these things with, my friends out there. And nobody really – some people would get it. They get aspects. But nobody really seemed that interested. A few people did. But when I got out there on the internet, that's when I found that all these people – kind of were resonating the same thing back and forth and really creating something pretty great. So, I kind of explored that avenue of communication, and it's really been pretty fruitful for me.
There you go. And have you studied some of the other, there's many people out there doing kind of, both symbolic interpretation of what's in the mainstream, but also obviously the alternatives to that things, especially in the technology realm, seems to have a more esoteric or occult origins in some cases. Are you familiar with some of the, synchronicity, synchromysticism, and some of these subject matters?
Oh, sure. I love looking into that. And I don't read the New York Times, but I decided to pull up their technology section today, see if there's anything interesting. And the first news story I see is "Cultural Bent Hangs Over Oracle's Battle for Sun."
Hmm.
And if there isn't a more esoteric kind of, headline than that, Oracle's Battle for Sun, all of the technology names really, are resonating this very like deep, profound connection to the universe, and nobody really seems to realize it. I've definitely looked into all of the great people who have, been doing this kind of work, especially synchromysticism. And there's one thing I just kind of recently came upon, and I'm not sure if you've ever kind of heard somebody talk about this before, but the basics of technology and kind of information are ones and zeros, right?
Yeah.
So you could pretty much build anything out of ones and zeros. And if you just look at what a one and a zero is, and obviously there's symbolic interpretation, one's a phallus and one is actually a vagina.
Yes.
And out of the two, you get, great things of creation. And it's, just seeing that down to the very basic level, it resonates the same idea.
It certainly does, exactly. You're absolutely right. And I think we've touched upon that with a few other people as well. And that gets us into the whole, area of digitizing something. And we might get more into detail in that later on. But you mentioned just, I guess generally, if we talk about a little bit about where technology is heading, where do you see things are going at this point in time? Because there seems to be, just as you pointed out in terms of, articles and whatever you keep up with, the development is tremendous. And at least the way the media portrays where things are heading, transhumanist movement and the integration between machinery and human beings is just on a roll right now, it seems like. We're talking about computer brain interfaces. There's so many different avenues here that we can explore, obviously. But if we look at it from a more overarching point of view, where do you see that this is heading? Where's technology taking mankind, if you will?
Well, the media is kind of portraying it a few different ways. So robots and technology and kind of the interactions between, humans and this technology on a very physical level is being touted as a very positive thing, something that's going to make our lives so much more enjoyable, that's going to free up all of this time for us. And what I think a lot of people don't really realize is that if you really automate out all of these processes, you have a robot waiter, that means that a human is no longer going to be doing this job. And so what it really does is makes it so that the human is no longer necessary, almost auxiliary to the machine that's running all of the commerce, and it could actually be running the governments as well, because only a machine is able to look at things from that high of a perspective, to be able to crunch all the numbers and make these calculations. So when people talk about this kind of machine that's running, I have to question whether or not it's actually the kind of thing that's beyond even the humans. It's some kind of etheric kind of force that's been driving its way into the kind of the heart of man for quite some time. And to get back kind of, I guess, from the metaphysical level, I think that there will be something of a standoff between humans that won't accept technology, say, into their bodies, or as technological laborers, robot slaves, if you will. Those people will be almost left at a disadvantage. They won't be able to function in the society that's being created. So we're kind of seeing a very interesting future where there will be kind of two different branches of humanity, I believe. And it could result in something of a crisis.
I totally agree with you. I think that you're absolutely right in that regard. It seems to be developing in that way. And the question is, of course, if we indeed develop a centralized system where computers is running the show, because I've been thinking about this myself, and in one regard, one can take the viewpoint that if we let this run its course, so to speak, it's only in this transitional period in human history where this will be a problem, so to speak. The job that used to go to human being goes to the robot instead. But I guess the dream that they're trying to portray here as well is a world where all of this is all the boring jobs, so to speak, are being run by computers. So we as human beings can spend our time on painting, doing music, study science, and developing other areas as well. Do you think we'll ever get that far? Do you think that is the promise that we're being given, and in that way, that's what we're going to be heading that way? Or do you think that that's a false promise, and do you think it will be developing in some other way? It's a very tricky question, I understand, but I want to hear your take on that.
I think we can develop in that way. I think that's definitely where I'd like to head. I still work in technology, and I think that humans and technology can coexist peacefully, which sounds almost a little like an absurd statement, but I think that's the only way that we can go forward, or else it's mutual destruction. I personally love being able to work from home, to be able to communicate with you via this technology, to be able to save some time and to do the things like painting that you talk about. But if you look at it historically, when has technology ever really made the common man better off? It allows him to multitask, to have all of these gadgets, which of course cost money and cause him to work more. But all it does is makes him a more efficient slave.
Yeah.
Wages have not really increased over the course of the past century, at least here in America. It used to be that a woman could stay home and rear a child. Now a woman has to be part of our workforce and get taxed and all of the other things that go into being a productive member of society. So I don't think that that's really where we're headed on this current course. I think that there's potential and there's promise, and that the machines can definitely help us to create the future we want to see. But I think we need to take a drastic step back and reevaluate our relationship to the machine.
Hmm. Do you think that will happen in terms of... because it seems we're not reflective in nature overall if we generalize about what human beings doing. It's more like if we can think of something that is going to be it's going to be put into use, so to speak, is going to be implemented, and we always take the consequences afterwards, so to speak, because the system that we're currently under is more about fast development and implementing things before we have managed to study them. And do you think that could be a danger then, that we might go down an avenue, let's say that we develop an artificial intelligence or something similar, which actually can run amok if it's allowed to run its course, so to speak?
Well, yeah, and I think we've seen this over and over again in popular culture and in some of the other kinds of literature. And I think it almost is inevitable. I hope that we can avoid it, but it seems like it's part of the program. And unless we can alter that program in some way, it's going to run its course. Because all the components have been set in motion. All the microchips keep getting smaller. The robotic limbs keep getting more and more developed and being able to communicate with the brain, the neural activity. So it's we're coming to a future where all these things are, if they don't already exist, they're going to be possible within the very near future, and they're going to look very positive. Kind of from the outset, they're going to say, oh, it's helping all of these people. A wounded veteran comes back from a war and he's got a new arm. Isn't that great? And sure, in some regards, some of this stuff is really great. But it's going to be taken to another level. People are going to accept this technology into their bodies. You might have, instead of an iPod, you'll have a MyPod, and it's going to be, installed in your brain. And you can just access the wireless internet to download songs.
That is where it seems to be going. What I want to touch upon a little bit, I guess, is also the, you talked about these two different strands that seems to be developing. People who reject the system and those who willingly go into it. And I think that one of the questions as well that comes hand in hand with this is that, do you think there will be any places left on Earth where those who don't want to go into the system still can go? Because at this point, it seems to be developed into a global grid, a global system, meaning that if you're not registered, if you don't take the chip, if you're not involved in the system, you're barely going to be able to function, at least in a regular city. So what do you think we're looking at here? Are we looking at more of a Luddite, if we can use that term, kind of population that has rejected this and might live more simply with the local farming, what have you? And then you have this ultra-high technological mega cities that is concentrated on certain spots on the planet. And that's the dividing line that we have to choose from at this point. Or do you think there is a middle path here one can choose as well, that we can be partially in the system, but not entirely? What do you think, Kyle?
Well, I definitely see the first kind of option you talked about. I see that developing. I see it all over the movies and books, because when you have that kind of, let's say, fascist or technocratic state, kind of like in A Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, you kind of have to leave options. It's just like how in The Matrix, they allow Zion to exist because it needs to exist. Not everybody can function within that society. And I think they're going to recognize that we've got to give them a way out. Maybe I'm just being optimistic and they'll just kill anybody that doesn't want to be in it. But I don't think that's the way it would really happen. As to kind of a middle ground, I think that's the best alternative. I think that commerce can function amazingly if we kind of unleash the human beings to use this technology as they see fit. I think that the future of virtual offices, virtual companies, and kind of a decentralized business structure can be extremely liberating, because people won't have to travel to big populated cities. They can live in the suburbs, but yet still be involved in global commerce, be right there connected to the entire world. So I think that we don't have to move into a very centralized, tight structure, but that's definitely the trend that I'm seeing.
you know, one thing that comes up as well is this idea of if this grid ever goes down, there's a multitude of different theories in regards to what could happen. We could have everything from a polar shift, a magnetic polar shift, which would alter everything. We could have EMPs or CMEs ejected from the sun, which they're talking about is potentially been upcoming now around 2010, stretching into 2013-14, where basically large electrical power stations and so forth actually are knocked out because of sun activity. And the question is, I guess, if we go into the system full force and we accept everything and we become a part of it, it's part of us, we're part of it, and let's say we have simple things as a power outage and things like that, what happens when the grid goes down? Do you think we will be left at, you know, completely stupefied and can't do simple things anymore, like start a fire, because we don't have that basic level of technology left in us, so to speak? What's your take, Kyle?
I do think that. I think people don't know how to even exist in nature anymore. A lot of people I've come across are almost scared of being outside. They're raised through most of their days in schools, not being taught about the fundamental kind of aspects of being a human on this planet, learning how to make a fire, learning how to hunt for food, learning how to garden. They're very much connected to this machine. So if the machine goes down, they're going to, I think, not be stupefied so much as go into a state of chaos. They're going to see the whole world crumbling before their eyes, not realizing that the technological world is mainly just illusions to a large extent, that, you know, the real world's all around them. So I think that some parts of the world will be affected more than others. If you look even today, I think 50 million people in Brazil are without power. Something happened there. It might have been hacking of some sort that caused it, which could be another kind of way that power systems go down, or they might just get overloaded. But the people in Brazil probably would handle 50 million in Brazil would handle it a whole lot better than 50 million in America. So it's going to be the places where they haven't really accepted technology as being kind of the essential aspect of life that will be affected least.
Yes. And I guess we can talk a little bit about the, what we would consider technology as well. You in your article, The Gods of Technology, you went into this a little bit at the beginning, basically what technology is, or even the history of tool, the use of tools and so forth. And we can look, for instance, at the use of fire as a form of technology. And I guess that we wouldn't have obviously arrived to the level where we're at today if we'd thrown that out the window, not incorporated that. And so where do you see the origins of this thing coming from? Many people said that we've, through the mythological record and whatnot, have been given technology. It's been handed down to us by the gods. Various number of theories, of course, who these were and what the origins of this actually is. But in one way, I guess I want to ask you, do you think that we made the mistake to begin with to kind of accept this into our society, that we began using tools, we began using fire, or do you think that that's ultimately has been a good thing for humanity, Kyle?
It's hard to say. So it's kind of asking the question, were we in a Garden of Eden ever? Was that how it could have been if we not need tools? And so I think that this kind of whole story, I think it had to happen at a certain level. And I think, man's kind of been rebuilding what once was. And I think technology has been, around for quite some time in different states, and it was at very high levels before. And so what we have to kind of question is, what high levels of technology do we see? What actually built the Great Pyramid? The technology we have today couldn't really accomplish that.
Yeah.
So it seems that we were actually at a far more advanced state of technology prior to this. And maybe it's that we started viewing these tools as something outside of the body. So I mentioned that other animals like primates, birds, dolphins, and quite a few others, I think, have been known to actually use things outside their body to get some food or to build nests. You know, so of course, utilizing things outside the body is essential, but the body itself, I believe, is a technological instrument. It's automated. We don't really have to put in all that much conscious thought to get our body to continually regenerate, to build new things, to take care of all of our support systems. And by using this technology, we can transform thoughts, which I think are essentially, you know, things of light, into physical manifestation around us. The question is, are we using tools that are doing the job efficiently? And who's the one that's deciding what is to be manifested? So with all tools, it's not really, is this tool evil? Is a hammer evil? No, a hammer's a hammer. But, you know, in the hands of a psychotic, it's a great weapon. In the hands of, you know, a carpenter, it's a tool for building. It's a tool for making, things that people want. So, I don't think that accepting technology as is really was a bad thing for humanity. It's what happened, I think, afterwards that caused the problem.
That's a good point. And that's an interesting theory you mentioned there regarding, I guess, the body as well, because one way, I guess, we can look at the human body as a form of an organic form of robot almost in that sense. And you mentioned this, that it's almost self-perpetuating. It's okay, we need the oxygen, we need to put energy in the form of food into it for it to function and work, obviously. But beyond that, the body inherits its own intelligence. It knows how to digest our food, for instance. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to say to the immune system, okay, switch on, switch off, or, you know, things like that. So in one way, you're right. I think it is being run like a technology. And if we have that as a backdrop, do you think that we have been designed in that way? Because we can look at alien intervention from different points of view. We can look at it from the point of view that we are actually the outcome of another race who has created us for whatever purpose, maybe to have an experience in a body and so forth. Or we can look at it from the point of view that we've just been handed certain sets of tools and knowledge from the outside in order to continue our experience here. But what do you think, Kyle? Do you think that we are designed, or do you think that we merely just have gotten help from somewhere else in order to have the experience that we're having now?
Well, I do think we were designed at a certain level. And it's just kind of the question of, yeah, who was doing the designing? And why? It seems to a certain level that humans have actually been breeding and have known like the fundamentals of genetics for quite some time. Look at what we were able to do with dogs, transforming them from a wolf into all these different creatures with all these different characteristics. So it might not have necessarily been forces outside of the human race that were molding humans to be what they are today. Because we've been doing the same kind of thing for thousands and thousands of years. And then you could kind of also maybe come up with the idea that we ourselves kind of designed what we're going to look like, what our attributes are going to be. Kind of like life is a video game. And before you go in, you create your character, you create your avatar. You know, you give him he's 6 foot, he's got blondish brown hair, and he's got this color eyes. We'll make him like this. And so you're given the set parameters, and then you go in and do what you can do with that body. So there are a lot of different levels, I believe, to the question, and it really requires some deep thought to discover, you know, what am I really?
Yeah.
Because I'm not necessarily just my body. My body is continuously rebuilt. So I think it's something about every 7 years every single cell in my body is a new cell. The connections that are made in the brain are continuously updated, especially if you're getting involved into, you know, some of the more esoteric material. Your brain is completely transforming all of the time, even into old age. So what is this thing that, you know, I call I?
Yeah.
And can it be changed? Because if you simply lesion a few sections of brain, if you, you know, induce the brain with some sorts of drugs, then the personality changes. And so, you know, of course this gets into the whole kind of question of whether or not there is free will or determinism.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the kind of, if free will is an illusion, it's a very, I think it's, quote, it's a very persistent one. So I think that we are here as beings of free will, and we've been given technology to create something. The problem is that we're using other people's plans, and we're not really figuring out what it was that we were meant to build.
Mm. Well, I want to talk more about that later on. That's an interesting thought as well. And because to me also, I recognize that there is a manipulative level in terms of technology. One can say that we are being, in one way, turned into robots. One can say that we are being given different technologies in order to, as you alluded to before, almost become more stupid. We hand ourselves over to a set of machines that run things for us, and consequently, as we mentioned, if that breaks down, we break down. But as a kind of as a side track to this, I also see that it's also an attempt to learn more about ourselves, because if we indeed are designed, I'd say that the best way to learn about ourselves is to try to design another race. And what I'm saying is that it seems to me that it's also an attempt to learn about ourselves. If we build robots, or if we mess around with the genes, or if we try to replicate the neural network of either a rat's brain or a human being's brain, we're also going to discover what is the soul, the nature of the spiritual reality as well. So I can see the manipulative factor here, so to speak, but I can also see that there's a purpose here. We're on a learning curve because we actually are discovering something about ourselves at the same time. Would you agree on that as well, Kyle?
Sure. I think it is an act of creation, and we're creating this thing, whether it's robots or intelligence of some sort. We're creating it in our image, and we, at a certain level, we want it to surpass us. That's the goal. That's what every father kind of wants for his son, I believe, is for him to do greater things than him. And so the kind of worry is that if we create these, and I'll use the word gods of technology right now.
Yeah,
exactly. They could potentially, you know, overthrow their former creators, kind of like the story of the Titans. The Titans were overthrown by the Olympians. So the people that came before, the more archaic forces, get kind of destroyed and replaced by the ones that they produced.
That is interesting. It's almost like this story is bending back onto itself again, and we're in one way recreating the mythology that is in our ancient past. And it seems like this story is recurring. It's cyclical, so to speak. And as you alluded to before, our technology seems to have been much more advanced in the ancient past as well, which seems to be that we're trying to come up to this level. But then something happens. Something happens at that point which knocks us off our feet, and we lose that technology. People use the metaphor of Atlantis or what have you. And to me, it seems like we're coming closer and closer to that kind of image again, so to speak, or that mythological story, that we're almost at the cusp of this, you know, in one way, wonderful world potentially, which could be actually very much helped by all the discoveries that we're making within science, genetics, what have you. But I guess the danger as well here is that if we become too lazy, if we hand over too much to the machine, so to speak, we we are going to lose the plot again, or potentially we could go into another factor. If we play with too much of a strong force, we could end up in cataclysmic changes in regards to the Earth. I mean, you mentioned before, for instance, simple weather modification. This is messing with the forces of nature, so to speak. And in one way, we are becoming these gods. So do you think that it comes with a danger, so to speak, as well, as we discover more, as we become more and more advanced?
Oh, definitely. And I think that we don't understand the consequences for even the most fundamental aspects of technology. Taking energy from the Earth has a big consequence. Taking energy from the sun, even. So solar panels, if say you were to have a huge field of solar panels, that sunlight not hitting the Earth and instead being captured for energy, electrical energy, that would have a profound effect on the surrounding weather. It would have a profound effect upon the life of the planet around that. And that's just one small example. And then if you kind of take this idea to some of the more secret technologies like anti-gravity or anything that's kind of harnessing what some term free energy could be kind of draining a very important battery that if it goes down, a lot of stuff goes down. And I think that some of this technology, kind of the anti-gravity and some of the things that the Nazis were looking into, you know, when they were in power and then when they came to the United States afterwards, I think that same kind of energy that they're harnessing there is the same energy that humans harness. And so at a certain level, I think we're very profoundly connected to the technology we have all around us. It's running on energy. It's running on universal energy, and so are we. We're just conduits for it. So I think we're different than these machines, but we're definitely similar, and we need to understand them and the energy that they run on so as to avoid this kind of cataclysmic event that has, you know, seemed to occur many times in the past.
And you know, I guess there's two other things that I'd like to discuss with you. One is in regards to, I guess, the transhumanist movement, and we can begin on that note, which is slowly, you know, going forward. It's gaining momentum in one way, and people have different ideas on where this will take us. Some believe we can come up to a point where we'll be able to upload our souls or our essence into a machine by replicating either our neural pathways or a neural network in the brain. Other people believe that we merge completely with robots. Other people are talking about longevity, for instance, or the gerontologists are talking about we can extend our lives basically forever and forever. And so if we look at it from a point of view of the transhumanist movement, what's your basic take on that? Do you think that they're onto something, or do you think that it's just a pipe dream that actually never will play out, Kat?
I think it will play out. I think it already is playing out. Let's start off with basic technology fusing with the human body. That's already, you know, happening. People have pacemakers, and they've had them for a while. We talked about robotic limbs briefly. It's only going to get more developed, and, you know, we're going to start seeing people who are like Darth Vader, you know, who are still, you know, human looking, but where most of their body is really made up of technology. And a lot of people are going to be willingly taking this on because it'll make them stronger. It'll make them think faster.
Yeah.
It'll make their brain kind of like a massive hard drive. They'll be able to download information instantly and learn new subjects, like how Neo learns Kung Fu in the Matrix instantly. And so this is definitely dangerous. And then there's a whole nother aspect, which you speak of, which is kind of downloading or uploading the soul of a person into another body or into kind of an artificial construct. And so we can see people uploading themselves into another body in movies like Surrogates.
Yes,
Surrogates
yes.
just came out. And, you know, I'd been thinking about that for a while before the I saw the trailer. And then I saw that and I said, wow, that really looks like something that could potentially happen. And you also look at, you know, this new big James Cameron movie coming out, Avatar.
Yeah.
Where it's I think it's a human being on an alien world inhabiting and using that alien body as its kind of its vehicle. So it's a person remotely inhabiting you know, a body. And that's pretty incredible, but it almost it doesn't seem that far off. We see chimps being able to move robotic arms with their minds.
Yeah.
It's right there. I think it's actually being held back to a certain extent so as not to scare people off from it. It has to be gradually introduced so that people don't get too scared, that they take it piece by piece, and then before you know it, they end up you know, in this kind of digital nightmare.
Well, that's a good point. I wanted to get into that with you as well in regards to, you mentioned Surrogates. There's another one called Gamer. I've only seen the trailer for it. It seems to be a little bit similar in that sense. Avatar, you mentioned, and movies has a tremendous impact in that sense that it's helping to acclimatize us to the possible future or what they plan to bring in. And the question, of course, is obvious. I mean, are we being program for the sake of accepting this technology, or are we being warned here? Because to me, it seems like we are constantly subjected to also the nightmare scenario in the movies, which means to me that they play out our worst nightmare on the movie theater screen, so to speak, and that's the best way for us, from their point of view, to kind of get acclimatized to it. We think that we are getting accustomed to the worst case scenarios here of what the technology might bring. So if we introduce that to the people who are looking at this, they'll be more prone to actually accept it further down the line because they will already be familiar and already be, in a weird kind of way, scared by it. But that also means that they already are familiar with those scary scenarios that might play out. I don't know if you follow my train of thought there, Kyle, but this is something that to me seems very prominent, that they're showing the Terminator's scenario here, so to speak, in that sense, that machines will take over. But at the same time, that actually acclimatizes ourselves to it. What do you think, Kyle?
Well, I think that the media is not entirely bad. I've used to think that, you know, pretty much anything coming out of them had you know, very, very negative purpose. And for the most part, that's true. But coming away from Gamer, I couldn't see that. I really think that they are trying to warn us. At least some people within Hollywood and within the government are trying to warn us and say, this is where we're heading. Do something about it. And you see people like Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, before the Supreme Court saying, you're going to have to rule on whether or not people are required to accept microchips to track them. You're going to have to rule on that. And you know, people just don't seem to care. Most people, I think, wouldn't go out and see a movie like Gamer. Most people don't really make the kind of connections that you might make when watching the Terminator series. They see them as these science fiction fantasies without actually seeing what's being built right before their eyes. So I think the kind of the responsibility is on us. Not on the people who are putting out the material, but the responsibility is on us to say, this is where I draw the line. Mm-hmm. This is where I make a stand and say no, that's not the future I want to create. Kind of one thing that I think also should be considered is whether or not machines are a scapegoat, whether or not there's actually human force behind them in these kind of the movies. You don't see any humans behind the Terminators, but there could be. There could be a small group of people controlling them and using them as their army to kind of to wage war against the rest of the populace.
Well, that's a good point, because ultimately a computer is programmed by a human being, and the same thing would apply to a robot. And I think you raise a very valid point and a good thing that people should contemplate over, because we never see, as you say, just in the movies anyway, so far, we don't see that there is a human being behind the robot force that comes against us. Could we say, do you think that this could potentially tie into the whole depopulation agenda in that sense, that we might end up in a scenario where in some way a strife or a fighting starts between humans and robots or machines or an AI system, but actually the AI or the robot system has been programmed by a few people to get rid of a lot of human beings on this planet? Do you think that's a possible scenario that we could see in the future?
Sure. I put a picture in The Gods of Technology of a robot from this upcoming movie called Astro Boy. And the picture has the letters ZOG put right on his chest. The robot is just labeled Zog. And not a whole lot of people would actually know this, but Zog has historically stood for, especially over the past 20 years, Zionist occupational government. And, you know, if let's just put myself in a hypothetical situation. If I was a small group of people who, you know, really believed in eugenics, and I didn't like most of the planet, thought they were all idiots, what's the best way to wage war against them? To have human soldiers going out and fighting the battles, or to have machines doing it for me? It doesn't have a human face to it. It's hard to really trace where it's coming from. You know, why are these machines attacking us? The people who would be attacked by them are almost left in question. Where's this coming from? But the funny thing is that this is already happening, and it's not exactly funny. It's more terrible.
Yeah.
But people who are killed by drones, by these predator planes that have just humans sitting, you know, at a controller flying them. They're being so distanced from the killing itself that they themselves are almost becoming machines. They're just playing like a little video game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, soon we're going to be having these machines able to make the decisions on whether or not to shoot by themselves. But we're almost there.
Yeah, we are. You're absolutely right. And you, in your article, you picked up a few that we have linked up from Red Eyes previously. For instance, we have these they look like something out of Terminator 2, T2. Absolutely. They have a small tank look kind of through them, a bandwagon. And, some are referred to as the sword. There's a few other models out there as well that could make these decisions. But then we have a new kind of breed, if you will, of machines that are coming in that they talked about, who could even eat or feed off of dead bodies in order to propel themselves forward. I mean, this is a nightmare scenario right there. But I mean, why develop a robot like that? What is the logic behind that? We're talking about something that could propel itself in a World War III kind of situation where it goes from, it kills a human being, feeds on the carcass in order to propel itself forward. It's a death machine, nothing else. You know, it's horrendous. And you linked that up as well, didn't you, Kyle?
Yeah. Well, they actually came out, the people who designed that robot, they came out soon after and said, oh, although it could eat human bodies, we're just going to have it we're going to program it to feed on vegetation instead. So it doesn't only need to eat human bodies, it's omnivorous.
That's
which
great.
Is kind of interesting. So yeah, these are the machines that are in your face, all about death. Their sole function is to kill. Some military robots are for rescue missions, but those are very obvious. I think that kind of the iRobot scenario could be a little bit more frightening or even realistic, which is all of these new technologies are coming out, all have the same uplink. They're all uplink, you know, they're all connected to the same central database.
Mm-hmm.
And so they communicate back and forth every day. And kind of a message goes out wherein these robots, an iRobot, declare there's martial law. And so robots are rounding up, masses of population. And people, they can't really fight against these robots. They're too strong. They don't have flesh and blood, you know, so that they're very difficult to fight against. And, you know, although this might be a few years off where this kind of scenario would happen, I think that such a thing is such a story is kind of representative of what's happening to humans these days. Think about, you know, what police and military are outfitted with when they go into protests, when they go into battle zones. They are so heavily, you know, armored and protected that just a regular person off the street wearing, you know, regular clothes stands no chance against, you know, these people moving against them.
Yeah.
Even in the United States, where people are very well armed, it's hard to deal with the kind of technology that's being employed against people. If you look at the G20 protesters, you have the sonic equipment,
yeah,
the LRAD, and really, you know, all sorts of the old school technology as well being used against people, and it's really hard to stand up against.
Absolutely. And you know, Kyle, we have much more to discuss. I want to get into more of the artificiality of everything. We have other aspects to this technology developing as well, cloning, the whole GMO question, of course, to genetically modify basically everything in our environment, which spreads, and what the outcome would be potentially. You touched upon the video game aspect as well, which is really interesting, because to me it seems like we're training young people today to sit at their computers, but that would be potentially the perfect soldier of tomorrow, as you alluded to, that they can sit behind a screen with a keyboard and a mouse, but actually running real-time drones in a real war scenario. So there's tons more I want to discuss with you about, Kyle. But let's take a short break here, round things up here for the first hour. And please mention your website for us again, and tell us where people can go to find out more about your work and what you're writing about, Kyle.
Sure. So the website is startheory.wordpress.com. And I've got, quite a bit of research up there. So go there. The archives are all on the right. Take a look around. And, you know, I've written it for all of, you know, the readers, but I've also written it for myself. And it's really kind of a journey into the very nature of existence itself. So I really hope you guys like it out there. And thanks for having on for this first hour. And I hope everybody else joins us in the second hour by signing up to become members.
Okay, thank you very much, Kyle. Again, the website startheory.wordpress.com. Head on over there or click through from redicecreations.com. We'll take a short break here, but we'll be back with more with Kyle Hunt after this. Join us as we continue to ponder the role of technology and where we are heading in the future with Kyle Hunt. We discussed propaganda, media, movie programming, and also how the evil agenda, strange enough, is causing people to step up to their higher potential. We talk about transhumanism and human evolution, the hive mind and the worldwide mind. We also discuss the Vulcans, the two opposites and sometimes fighting sides in the human mind and consciousness. We talk about the alien question and ask if we have been invaded with ideas or technology, or if all of that simply is human creation by using advanced technology and manipulating people's perception. We discuss some interesting ideas with Kyle Hunt in the next hour. Sign up for membership to tune in to this and much more. RedIceCreations.com is the website. All information is up there for you on how to get access to all of our archives with radio, videos, and films. Also, sign up for our podcast feed if you want our program delivered right to you. We have one-click subscription options if you use iTunes or Soon. This is for the first hour. All our second hours of our programs can be accessed through RSS or podcast feed as well. Simply go to the radio information page for the second hour that you want to listen to and click on the RSS icon on that page. Check our upcoming guests in our radio archive. More interesting radio is coming your way soon. But more is coming up now with Kyle Hunt, Hour 2. We'll be right back.
Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mind. Into each heart some tears must fall, but someday the sun will shine. Some folks can lose the blues in their hearts, but when I think of you, another shower starts. Into each light some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine.
Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine. Into each heart some tears must fall, but someday the sun will shine. Some folks can lose the blues in their hearts, but when I think of you, another shower starts. Into each life some rain must fall, but much is falling in mine.
Into each and every life some rain has got to fall, but too much of that stuff has fallen into mine. And into each heart some tears has got to fall, but I know that someday that sun is bound to shine.
Some folks can lose